WFM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
It's Monday, the 7th of June. Thanks to Afric for joining us for the afternoon. Coming up on Game On tonight, as Ireland prepared to play Hungary in Budapest, Alan Cawley has crossed the river to join us in studio.
Yeah, obviously, I think the overall feeling tonight is one of frustration. You know, I thought we'd done really well in the first half. Knocked around really well. The fact that we got the goal as well, which is what we wanted. Thought we were well on top in the game. And I don't know, that half-time coming a bad time for us and maybe a good time for them.
Alan, you were honing your punditry skills from an early age. When was that, 2009?
Is that 2009?
Yeah, after that that's you, after a game in Europe.
Yeah, we played, I think Andrew was saying outside, we played Valletta in a Europa League match.
Were you on there? A Europa League match, yeah, and... Yeah, I was honing my skills back then, Ray. I used to love the interviews, I have to say.
You knew exactly what you were doing. You had a career ahead of you. We're also going to speak to Jill Pender ahead of Ireland's crucial hockey clash with Spain at the European Championships.
Gillian Pender now has the opportunity to send the Green Army wild. Can she find a way past the Spanish keeper, Ruiz, in these 8 seconds? Pender scored with her first shuttle. Pender scored with her second!
After a very dramatic weekend of hurling, Niall Moran runs the rule on the Allianz League.
Tuck out a long one by Terry Kennedy. Niall Moran is there as he goes to make it 3 points. It's sailing between the posts and Limerick can see Waterford within their sights.
And we talked to Gavin Casey about Ireland's boxers as they fight their way to Tokyo.
By a score of 10 points tonight, and the Olympic champion.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, Alan Cawley, it is brilliant to have you in studio on this very sunny bank holiday Monday. Did you have a nice weekend?
I had a great weekend, Maria, and still, it's still going on, I have to say. I can't believe you played that interview. That was 2009.
2009, you're after losing a game in Europe and you're playing for Pats.
Yeah, I used to love the games in Europe, but it's funny there you're slagging me because the boys used to slag me about the interviews and doing things. I was very accessible to the media back then, Marie. I used to love the interviews and I took a major interest in them, as you say, and it's funny now that I'm doing this kind of stuff. But Eamon Collins, I'll tell you a funny story. Eamon Collins, who was our coach at Shelburne at the time, and I was going through a bit of a wrangle over the time I moved from UCD to Shells. It's a long story, we won't go into it, but there was a fair bit of not media attention to it, but there would have been updates daily kind of because of what was going on. So I came into training one morning, Eamon Collins, and he was a real character, Eamon. He turns around, hey, and he gave me this nickname and it's stuck ever since, Quotesy, right? And that's what the boys called me and Eamon and the ball, because he says, hey, Quotesy, every time I open the paper, you're in it, you're a media man's dream, you are Quotesy. So it just stuck from then on. The boys used to always like, no,
because
he wasn't wrong.
That answer went on for about 3 minutes. I think you started asking yourself questions in it.
I was interviewing myself at that stage, was I?
So I'm not surprised to hear that you got that nickname. Yeah. We were looking on YouTube a little bit earlier and we saw an absolutely cracking goal that you scored against Sligo Rovers back in 2009 as well. There was no commentary on it, unfortunately. But
no, and we better not mention that because it was against Sligo Rovers and you'd swear it was a goal I scored in the World Cup final because I went nuts, Marie.
But you actually took your top off and slid along the grass.
In a meaningless 1-1 draw, but sure, as I always say to people, the best part of scoring of playing football was scoring a goal. So I used to celebrate, as I say, as if I scored in front of 80,000 people.
Well,
and that's what it's all about.
You took those celebrations very seriously. Anyway, we'll have to dig up a few more of them. Now, we are going to start with football today, Alan, because we are in the middle of international games. There's plenty of them going on. Unfortunately, Ireland's are just friendlies because they are not going to the Euros, but they do still feel like they're quite significant. 4-1 victory over Andorra, and then they're playing Hungary in their second international friendly and hoping for 2 wins from 2. Do you think that they're going to be able to get it?
I think it'll be difficult, Marie, but I think they should be going into the game with a lot of confidence. Obviously, it's only Andorra, as we've all spoken about, and the analysis since then, that's obviously the strap line across it, is the fact that it is only Andorra. But the fact that it's our first win, Marie, I think they will take heart from it and take a lot of confidence, scored a few goals as well. And hopefully, I'd like to think we can build a bit of momentum off the back of that. It's funny that you're describing it as, even though they're only pre-season friendlies or end-of-season friendlies and we're not going to the Euros, they do still matter a whole lot because of obviously the situation Stephen finds himself in and the fact that we haven't won in so long and he's trying to implement a new culture and philosophy, if you like, and new players and all sorts. So they are very important. They are very meaningful. You ask any of the lads that are involved over there at the moment, they'll be obviously taking it very serious. I was listening to John Egan in the press conference today and just speaking about how proud he was to wear the captain's armband. And especially, I think, for a lot of the young lads who are getting an opportunity as well, Marie, at this level, it matters a hell of a lot to every Irish player, but particularly for those young lads who probably see Stephen, and because of their progression from the 21s on up into the senior team, they're probably viewing Stephen as a manager who will, if they're playing well, will give them their opportunity. So there's an awful lot at stake for those players. I think there's a lot at stake for Stephen, but I'd like to think the fact that we got the victory on Friday night, we can bring a bit of momentum and a bit of confidence into the game and put up a better performance. And I think we will as well tomorrow, because what often happens is when you're playing against better opposition, you tend to raise your game as well. And I think we'll see a far better game tomorrow night.
And they need support as well, Alan, because it'd be difficult for players to be on a team that is getting criticised all the time and knowing that they're not going out performing, they're not keeping the public back at home happy with what they're doing on the pitch as well. And then the knock-on effect is that there's a lot of questions over their manager's job.
Yeah, I think they need support across the board from the football fraternity, if you like, in the country, because if anyone's realistic or knowledgeable about the game, surely they can see exactly what's happening here, Marie, in terms of, I suppose, the complete change and transformation of what Stephen is trying to do and implement. And also the fact, if you look at the squad of players that he's trying to implement it with as well, we're not blessed with any kind of world-class superstars at the moment. It's a different generation that are coming through, and there has to be time and patience given to that, I feel. Now, as I mentioned to you when we were speaking about the game the other night, you have to be picking up the odd result here and there as well for a project to obviously be allowed to develop. And I think that's where probably the criticism was coming from, in the sense that we weren't getting results. So you'd like to think the time and patience will be given to Stephen, but as I say, he has to be picking up, and he has to be shown, I think, in the performances as well, that there is progression being made. I think that's a key thing for him if he wants that time and patience. But I certainly, for one, am realistic about the aspirations of the team and where they want to be and where they want to get to. I can see exactly what Stephen is trying to implement, and I think we have to get behind that, Marie, and if that means 2 or 3 years of pain, so be it, to get to where we want to go. Because I think if you want anything with longevity or sustainability in life, I think you have to play the long game with it, and I think Stephen deserves that chance.
Yeah, well, I think he keeps looking at September and talking about September in his press conferences, and what an important month it is going to be as they try and get some points on the board and ahead of their World Cup, or for their World Cup qualifications. But look, you mentioned it there, it's transition. He is trying to do something. There's 13 players who have made their senior international competitive debut, which is massive.
Massive. Well, there you go. Just in that line, it nearly sums it up, Marie. It's a monumental task that Stephen has at hand. He's fully aware of that. I think he has to be given the support, as I say, to allow him get on with that job and the development of these players. I still go back to the fact that the argument people will throw back at you is that it's a results orientated business. I certainly, one, am fully aware of that as well. But because of the situation we find ourselves in terms of the amount of new players, as you say, he's trying to implement. And the biggest thing, I think the biggest problem for Stephen is not the fact that the players he has when he gets them over here in terms of when he's together with them, it's when they go back to their clubs, Marie, he has no control over that situation, and a lot of them are not getting game time. And that's so important for a lot of the young lads. Like, we speak about Troy the other day, and there's a lot of, even before, I suppose, this year, there was a lot of optimism about what he could bring for the future. But then he goes out on loan at Millwall, doesn't quite work out for him. Then he's farmed out to Ipswich.
Plays
a little bit more, but then he comes back to Stephen. Is Stephen expected then to wave a magic wand when he gets these players and lads that haven't been playing at club level? So I think that's very important as well, and people need to realise and look, maybe rather than just when the players are together with Stephen, look at what these lads are doing every Saturday, or what they're not doing every Saturday when they're not involved in games, and just realise how difficult it is for Stephen that when he does get the players. And that's not me making excuse for Stephen. Of course I'm for Stephen, but I'd be the first to say if things are not working out, look, Stephen, you've had your chance, it's not working out. But how can we say after 11 or 12 games it's not working out when you consider all the things that were going on in terms of COVID and all the other things, and then you throw into the mix, Marie, as you said, the transition in players and new players and all that kind of stuff. So he has to be given time.
And could anyone say with confidence, just given the players that we have, and as you said, how little football some of them are playing, that if a new manager came in, that they're going to go out and qualify for a World Cup? So there's games coming up, Portugal, Azerbaijan and Serbia. I mean, are they going to do a better job than Stephen heading into these games? It's really hard to say.
Of course, it's impossible to say. Nobody knows. And the fear I would have is that if Stephen wasn't allowed or given the time, that some new manager comes in and we go back to our old ways, but people are short-sighted to think, oh, well, we might qualify by playing horrible, turgid football that nobody wants to watch. And it's not even about that, saying it's horrible, turgid football. It's about, you look across Europe and you look even the games that were on recently in terms of the friendlies over the weekend. I watched Romania yesterday against England. Romania were brilliant against England yesterday. All the teams now have improved so much, Marie, and they're all playing a similar style of football in terms of how progressive the football is. That's what Stephen is trying to introduce here. If we go back to what we were watching for the last 10 or 12 years, just for the sake of saying, oh, well, we qualified for a tournament, but you go across, people get drunk for 2 or 3 weeks and you come home with your tail between your legs, what good is that to anybody?
Well, there's a lot of people out that wouldn't mind that, Alan, I have
to
say.
And well, I saw a lot of people in town today who are back out enjoying themselves, Marie, and it's great to see that. But let Stephen get on with the job in hand, and maybe we can qualify, who knows, playing a progressive style of football now, that if we were to get to a major tournament in 3, 4, 5 years' time playing like that, I think we'd be a lot more competitive, Marie, than going over now, say, qualifying for a tournament, playing horrible football, and as I say, coming home after a couple of weeks.
Well, he's had them now for over a week in camp, and they've had that Andorra game and the Hungary game coming up. So it will be interesting to see what way they develop against that better opposition. As in, you're looking at Andorra, and you're probably not going to get any credit anyway because it's Andorra, but a performance against Hungary could put some credit in the bank and go on to build momentum.
Absolutely. You're bang on, Marie, because you look at the game the other night and people are quick. The first thing they'll say is it's only Andorra. So you're in a no-win situation. If you win 5-0, you're expected to win 5-0. If you don't play well, people will criticise that, as they will, because it's Andorra. So if you look at the game tomorrow night, I would agree totally. I think they'll improve. And again, the fact that they'll probably be back on a grass pitch, which is what you want. I know people will say they're professional footballers, they should be able to deal with anything. Believe me, that Astro pitch is the worst conditions you could play on that we saw the other night. So I think the performance will improve off the back of another 3 or 4 days of them being together. It's all about building them relationships with people as well, Marie. You could imagine trying to go out and play on a team and you look around at maybe you're the right side of midfielder and the centre midfielder never played together and you're trying to build that relationship. That's very difficult to do. So as you said, there's 13 new caps has kind of been picked so far. So I do think we'll see a much better performance tomorrow than what we saw the other night. Whether we'll get the result, I don't know, but I'd like to think, as I say, there'll be a lot of momentum coming off the back of us just getting a victory, even though it was Andorra.
And it is quite heartening. I know it's only a small thing, but still, there's been a difficult 12 games for that team, for that squad, for everyone involved. And yet still, when the players are speaking, there's no negativity. They're still being positive about what Stephen. Harry Arthur was talking today, saying that the culture has changed dramatically around this Ireland team and I'm loving every second of it. And Harry Arthur has played under a lot of managers and been around, but still there's, the cracks aren't starting to show in the squad, which is a really positive thing.
Yeah, because I think that's been reflective of the message maybe Stephen's given across to them. All the players want to be part of this, Marie, in terms of the way they're playing, because you go, like, if you were to speak to all those players individually at their clubs, that's the way they're all playing now. Harry Arthur, as you says, was under the regime here with Martin O'Neill where the football was horrible, and obviously he's had his run-ins maybe with the management. He's been a Fulham player with Scott Parker, the way they play. He's gone out on loan since he's been at Bournemouth with Eddie Howe. He knows the way the game is progressing in terms of the way these managers want the game to be played. He could probably see Ireland being left behind in the way we were trying to play for the last 5-6 years. He sees Stephen as someone who's a bit more modern day thinking and more kind of possession based, is what we've seen and what he's told us all along. So Harry Arthur is a fella who's probably looking at the situation at the moment. He's a good example, and he probably was looking, thinking, do I really want to get back involved in that? I could be on my holidays with my family now. But here he is over here being involved in the camp. He didn't even play in the game the other night, and as you says, he's coming out and still really positive about the impact Stephen is trying to have.
Well, Stephen Kenny did face the media today and he was asked about his tenure so far. This is what he had to say.
I would have wanted to do better than I have overall. I think, you know, there's no doubt. I think I won't try to paint a different picture. I think there's a clear vision and of the team that we want to create, want the team to have a clear identity. I think that the influx of, we have capped, we have 13 players that made their senior international debut in that period, and I think that's quite a radical shift in terms of competitive debut, sorry, not senior international debut, their senior international competitive debut in that period. And I think that's quite a radical shift, and I think we're creating a stronger squad going forward for the three-game windows that will, you know, a team that I think that the supporters can identify with.
Stephen Kenny speaking to the media a little bit earlier on. And look, he's not trying, as he said himself, to paint a different picture. He would have liked to have done better, but he's still in the job and he has a chance to improve things. But if you look at where we started, and we'll just say the Andorra game, Alan, are we seeing almost an evolution of the way he is doing things or he wants to do things?
Yeah, well, the Andorra one is probably not a great example to say because it was so poor, Marie, and we have to be honest about that. But in terms of what he's trying to do, I can absolutely see what Stephen is trying to do and implement. All the players can as well. As you says, they all are buying into it and want to be part of it. That's so important in any sport, that you have the players behind you and believing in what you're trying to do. I do think there's progression, Marie, I have to say. And I can't emphasise enough just how difficult the job is. Like, this is monumental what he's trying to do at the moment. Unfortunately, Stephen's been tasked with that, but it's an unbelievable opportunity for him. But if we had Pep Guardiola managing this Ireland squad, people would probably be asking the same questions in terms of just how difficult this job it is for Pep Guardiola because of the players at his disposal. And that's not being down on the players. That's just the reality of the situation, that I suppose in bygone eras when we had all these superstars like Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, or the brilliant squads that we had over the years, we don't have those players at the moment. And they have to be allowed the time to flourish in terms of getting game time at their clubs. And then when they come into our team and our squad, and Stephen is obviously, I'm delighted that he's had the time now with them, because up to now he's had no time with them whatsoever. I think this will be hugely beneficial, this little 10 day window with them, or 2 weeks, in terms of them going forward and what we can see them maybe down the line in September. But again, I go back to whatever Stephen is trying to implement here, what we can all see, it's very, very hard for him then when the players go back. That it's so important. Like, there's Troy Parrott at the moment. I hope he plays, because he's riding the crest of the wave maybe over the weekend when he thinks he scored 2 goals. You could imagine tomorrow if he doesn't play. I do think he will play. But if he goes back to his club now, he'll go back to Spurs. I think he'd probably end up going out on loan, and I think that's good for him. I think he needs to go out on loan and play regularly. But you need to keep that momentum with him, that what he did the other night, because he's obviously, he would be, and to be fair to him, I think regardless of him getting the 2 goals, I think the character he showed as well is certainly someone that you could look at and think we could pin our hopes on somebody like him. He certainly looked like he has the right characteristics to go about his professional kind of career. So I do think there's progress, Mary. I absolutely do. And I'm not one with blinkers on. If Stephen Kenny was struggling, I'd be the first one to say, this is a shambles, and blow it up now and get someone else in. But I'm telling you, Mary, you could have Pep Guardiola managing these fellas, and it wouldn't be much more different than what we're seeing at the moment.
Well, that brings us along nicely to one of our texts. Someone has texted in and said, what would Alan do if the manager was from outside Ireland and the manager had the same results as Stephen Kenny? Would you be giving him a chance, or would you want him gone?
If it depends. It's nothing to do with
If it was Pep Guardiola, so it was coming in and hadn't
give
won
him a chance. We'd give Pep a chance.
wouldn't be going to League of Ireland matches though.
No, but I don't think this is anything to do with the fact that Stephen is from here whatsoever. I think it's more on the job has to be given to somebody based on merit, and Stephen was given the job on merit and what he had done off the back of Dundalk. We all hoped, obviously, that things would certainly improve a lot better, maybe, I wouldn't say overnight. People are arguing, well, it's 12 games now, how much more? This could take 2 years, Marie. Honestly, it could take two and a half, 3 years. Again, whether the fans are prepared to see that, but I don't mind if we go through pain for 2 or 3 years, if it means for the next 25 years we have something identifiable with the squad and how we're trying to play, and there's development coming through. And I think you have to go back to even what Stephen is trying to do at the moment. There's continuity with the 15s, the 17s, the 19s, the 21s. They're all singing off the same hymn sheet now in terms of the managers. And as I say, there's continuity with Stephen and speaking to those managers as well. We never had that. The senior manager would come in and all he would care about was the senior team, Marie. And then he wouldn't give a monkey's about the youth development in terms of what's coming through. So I think that's hugely important as well, and that should be something that's referenced.
Okay, so let's move on to England, because it has been an interesting weekend for them, an interesting couple of friendlies, but they're heading into the business side of the Euros now. They're going to kick off, and I think there's still quite a lot of questions hanging over their team and their squad for Gareth Southgate. What have you made of them? Just, I know they're only friendlies and it's really hard to tell, but just so far.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Marie, in the sense that there is one or two questions. The question marks I have for them, now it's hard to judge them on those two games, and I often wonder about these pre-season games. Would you love to be going out hammering teams 4-5-0? Then the expectation will go through the roof, Marie, and then to come to next week against Croatia and to lose 1-0, and they're brought back down to earth straight away. I think coming off the back of the two games, they've been okay performances. It might keep the expectation just tempered for now, and then if they were to go in next week with their full team against Croatia and beat them, then the expectation would go through the roof, but at least you're in the tournament then. But looking at the game the other night, yesterday I watched it, the question marks I would have around him, and it's interesting with the player that he named today, is Ben White coming into the squad. Everybody thought he might go with Ward-Prowse in midfield. That tells me that Harry Maguire is struggling, and the worry I have for them is if Harry Maguire isn't fit, not that I'm mad on Harry Maguire, but Harry Maguire and Stones is much better than Stones and Cody or Stones and Mings, and that would be the worry I would have in terms of that central area partnership, central defence. I also have a major worry about the goalkeeper. I said that the other night about Pickford. He's too erratic. But funny enough, the lad that played yesterday, Sam Johnston, I don't know, did you see the save he pulled off, Marie? It was absolutely one of the best saves I've ever seen, and he played really, really well in the match. And I just wonder, coming off the back of that, would Southgate be brave enough to actually give him a start next week? Because I don't think either of the goalkeepers have convinced, and even Dean Henderson at United, I'm not convinced by him either. So it would be a big call going into the Croatia game if he was to give Johnston a start. But they're the areas of concern. Fullbacks, no problems. Midfield area, no problem. Going forward, no problem. The Foden, Mount to come back in. Grealish is getting up to speed. Henderson came on the other day, or yesterday, played 45 minutes. They've Kane to come back in. So they've an array of talent going forward.
Key positions, centre half and goalkeeper, to have question marks over. I'd prefer to have question marks over other areas of the pitch.
Yeah, and you're 100% right, because they are key positions, and that's the worry I have, especially the goalkeeper. If you don't have a top quality goalkeeper, you're winning nothing. The two with Pickford and Dean Henderson, I'm not sure if they're top quality. This young lad, Sam Johnston, played really well with West Brom. I know they got relegated, but they probably would have conceded double the goals to concede it only for him because of the team that was in front of him. But yesterday he was really good. Now, I go back to it, it's a brave call if he was to throw him in next week. But they would be the worries I have. Like, people are asking the question, do I think England will win it? I think they've a great chance. I really do. And I watched a lot of the other teams over the weekend. Belgium and Croatia played last night. And Croatia will be a tough game. Like, England's group is Scotland, Czech Republic and Croatia. That's a hell of a start, Croatia, next week. But if they get off to a winning start, the momentum that'll carry them forward, I do think they've a great chance, Marie. I really do. Like, people are suggesting they won't win it. I think they have an unbelievable chance. And the manager as well, I think Southgate is brilliant in how he conducts himself and carries himself. And he's a really good manager to have with a tournament with so many games at home, because I think he will keep dampen expectations. And he's very, very good with the media as well. And to be fair, I think he has the media on side. He's probably the first manager ever to manage England that he has the media on side with him, and I don't think they'll slaughter them as much as maybe what they would have done in the previous eras. So I give them a great chance.
Harry Kane said today that they're in a better position heading into this Euros than they were for their run in the 2018 World Cup semi-final.
Yeah, because you look at the players that have come through since then, Mount and Foden and Grealish. Like, the players are Rice is unbelievable, Calvin Phillips, Henderson to come back in. All, now you're going to laugh at me because they're all in that top half of the pitch, and you're saying, yeah, but what about the goalkeeper and the centre halves? And that is my worry for them. But I would agree with Harry Kane. I think they have a much better squad going into this tournament. And not only do they have a better squad, Marie, I think mentally they're probably better placed because of the experiences of the 2018 World Cup and what they went through. And maybe even Southgate, I listened to him recently in a podcast, and how he reflected on that time as well, and how he would have done things different. Even he was critical of himself in terms of his in-game management and substitutions. I think even he's better prepared going into this tournament than what they were in 2018. And they've got themselves to a semi-final. Since the semi-final up to now, they've beaten some of those top teams. They beat Belgium recently, they beat Spain. Going into the tournament, obviously, it's a different kettle of fish. But I think they should be really confident going into it, because, as I said, some of them kids are stars. Like, the Grealish, Foden and Mount are absolute superstars, them kids. So, and then you have Harry Kane on top of it. So I think for the other teams that are going to face them, they'll be very, very fearful of facing England.
Can you play Grealish, Foden and Mount in the same starting 11?
Ooh, I would. I would if I was the manager.
You bother with the centre halves at all.
No, it'll be interesting, yeah, what he does in terms of the four at the back. I think you could play them because he likes to play with two midfielders. So I think he'll go with maybe Henderson and Rice, or even Rice and Calvin Phillips, or even Jude Bellingham has made a late kind of surge to get in the team. But I think if he's fit, Henderson, he'll start Henderson and Rice. And that's a very, very good two to have sitting in front of the back four. That allows then the three to go and play. I think Rashford is struggling, Marie. Up to now, probably the last few weeks, I would have said Rashford would have started. Yesterday, he's struggling and he's been struggling for a while. I know he came out recently and said he has an injury, but I would go with Grealish, Foden and Mount behind Kane. And look at those. Just listen to those form, Marie. They're unreal. Wouldn't you love to have those four in your team? Wouldn't you love to have one of them in your team? Never mind the four of them.
Well, we've had a texter in now who said that if Stephen Kenny was in charge a few years ago, he would have Jack Grealish and Declan Rice playing on our team.
But he wasn't in charge, and you'd have to go back to the manager that was obviously looking after things then and ask the question why they weren't involved, because look at the two of them now. They're unbelievable.
Okay, right. Enough about that. We'll be chatting about that all week because the Euros are...
It is exciting though, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah. Look, it's exactly what we want to be coming up. A load of games, brilliant players, top class. And I'm like you, I love the Euros.
The Euros, brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break out.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, earlier today, Naomi Carl's 46-minute goal handed Ireland a huge win over Scotland at the Euro Hockey Championships in Amsterdam to set up a showdown on Wednesday with Spain, where a victory will guarantee a World Cup ticket. Now, we're delighted to be joined by Jill Pender to go through today's action and also to look ahead to that game against Spain. Jill, I was watching the game earlier on, and I think it's fair to say it was a hard-fought one.
Yeah, it was, and Scotland and Ireland play many times against each other, and while Ireland edge the statistics in terms of wins, it can be a dog-eat-dog-eat world. So Ireland started out with so many opportunities and just failed to capitalise in terms of goals in the first half, and then finally in the last quarter, Naomi Carroll got a rebound off a short corner and gave Ireland the one-goal lead.
When after playing the World Cup, the number one team in the world, the Netherlands, which is obviously a really tough task, to go out and play Scotland then, is it difficult to change the way you play and how you approach a game in such a short period of time?
I mean, the way hockey usually runs is that there's a load of games in a really short space of time, so all teams are well used to that. To get the opportunity to play against the Dutch as the number one team in the world at the moment is something that the girls will relish, but they're a little bit off the pace in terms of matching them at the moment. So for them, the game against Scotland was a must-win game, and that 3 points will set them up nicely now to face Spain in the last group game.
It was incredible for Naomi Carl, really, when you think about it, Jill. I know we've spoken a couple of times about her journey with you leading into these games, but for her to get that goal, to be in this squad after nearly 2 years out of action and just even overcoming that really tough ACL.
Yeah, she's done really well. She's an inspiration for anybody who's picking up injuries and still having sporting ambitions at the highest level. It's great to see her back in an Irish jersey, and to get the first goal of the tournament for Ireland is nothing more than she deserves.
So when you look at the team now, and we've seen Ireland in major tournaments now quite regularly, and especially been lucky enough to see them on the TV, and again, it's brilliant to be able to sit down and watch these games. They tend to grow into tournaments. Is that what we're going to see from here, do you think?
I mean, I certainly hope so. You know, 3 points today, I know they didn't score as many goals as they would have liked to, but they will, when they look back in the video tonight in preparation for their match against Spain, they will be very pleased with how they play, particularly in the first half. And again, if they can just flip that mindset and put away some of those opportunities that they did create for themselves against Spain, they give themselves every single chance of coming out with 3 points against them and then progressing into the semi-finals, which is something that they haven't done before. So even though maybe it was a disappointing result because they didn't get the goals they were looking for, there's huge positives to be taken from that. And if they can carry that forward against Spain and then into the games towards the end of the week, I think they will be growing and developing the momentum throughout the rest of the tournament.
So key areas that they need to improve on, Jill, what are they, especially coming up against Spain, a team that they know really well?
Yeah, I would expect Ireland and Spain to be a relatively even contest. Spain are ranked 7th in the world, and Ireland then following suit in 8th. So I'd imagine each team will have a handful of chances, and I think whichever team defends the circle better and takes the opportunities that they do create for themselves will come out victorious in this game.
The fact that they do know them so well, played them five times in January, do you think that's a benefit to Ireland, the fact that they have come up against them, they know their strengths and their weaknesses? And obviously it's the same for Spain. Is it a case of who can take the most from those games and apply them in that match situation?
Yeah, Spain and Ireland play against each other many times during the year in different friendly series. So for Ireland, that was one of the first opportunities they got to play games since the pandemic started. So I know they were really relishing the opportunity, first of all, to play against quality opposition, but second of all, to just play games in general. And that will be the same for Spain. Both teams will know each other very, very well. I think it's those fine details of who executes the game plan a little bit better on the day will come out on top.
And just from looking at the last couple of games, Jill, I know that it's obviously really crucial to get the qualification for the World Cup, but there's also an Olympics on the horizon. Who's standing out for you as someone that has sealed their spot?
I don't know how much changes is going to be. The big difference will be that instead of having 18 players, you'll have 16 for the Olympic Games. I think that the real competition lies in the forward line. The likes of Deirdre Duke, who initially missed out on selection for this Europeans, actually played quite well today. So that's great for her to kind of show what she can do when she gets the opportunity on the pitch. But some of the bigger names maybe haven't been quite as dominant as they have been in past tournaments. So hopefully now as the tournament goes on, you'll start to see a little bit more from them. So I think it's all to play for. And even though in the back of your mind, you know this, you know, good performances in this Europeans will aid you when it comes down to selection for Tokyo. The real aim for them is that World Cup qualification, as you say. And I think as a team, that's their goal. And if they have good team performances, that'll trump individual ones.
And what about Sean Dancer? Like we spoke as well about his style of play that he's trying to bring more. We'd see more intensity with them, a more attacking game. Are we seeing that from them at the moment?
I think we saw that today, especially in the first half. He did an interview after the game and he kind of said against the likes of the Dutch, where you don't have as much possession, it's more what you do off the ball. Whereas today, Ireland had a lot more of the ball, so it's what you do with it. And I think against Spain, because I'm anticipating that game will be a little bit more even, I think that plays into whatever team's hands who can execute it better. I think if Spain defend really well and take their opportunities, I think they'll come out on top. And if Ireland do it, I think they're in a good shape for those 3 points. So that's kind of how I see the game going on Wednesday.
Yeah, you'd have to think, just considering the amount of opportunities that they created today and the fact that they weren't able to take them, that will hopefully fall into place for them against Spain, that's something that they'll be able to recognise, work on and execute better.
Yeah, and I think they know that. And it would be a lot more worrying if you were heading into the Spanish game having not created those opportunities. So I think while they're disappointed, and their forwards in particular will have a good look at that and see what can I do better. And is it a mindset? Is it an aggression type of thing? Is it a decision making as to what shot to take? I think they'll really have a look at that. And if they can take those opportunities, as I say, put some goals on the scoreboard, I think they're going to be a difficult team to roll over. But if they don't take those opportunities, then this tournament's going to flip on its head and be a very tricky one towards the end.
Yeah, and look, as we said as well, it is crucial for them and just for the summer as well and for everything, just building towards improving, getting better, getting the performances. Like, there's a lot on this group of girls over the next few months.
Yeah, the stakes are higher this summer than they ever have been before, and they know that, but I think they thrive under the pressure. And as you say, you've seen Irish teams grow into tournaments and just thrive off that momentum. I think Katie Mullen, when she spoke earlier, she said that, you know, they're used to the highs and lows and the emotional roller coaster that tournament hockey brings, so it's something that they're well used to. And I just think they're going to relish this opportunity to take on Spain. And, you know, in essence, if they beat Spain, they have not only a World Cup qualification spot sealed, but they'll have been guaranteed themselves a fourth place finish, which is higher than Ireland have ever finished before in a European Games. So it's an extremely exciting time for them. And we take out all that World Cup qualification, it's also just great prep for the Olympic Games, because with the pandemic, they're not going to get a huge volume of test matches between now and then.
And Jill, you know them all so well, and you've obviously seen them come through major tournaments and you've seen them grow as a team now. Can you, by looking at them, say, okay, look, they are much more experienced, they're doing things a little bit differently, they're much calmer, they're more prepared almost for these big moments?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's players in the squad, like Nicky Evans got her 200th cap today and Shirley McKay is just over 300 caps. So they have certain players that are bringing an absolute wealth of experience to the side. And it's also nice to see then the likes of Niamh Carey and Hannah McLaughlin who've come into the squad and this is their first major tournament. So it is nice to see that conveyor belt of players coming through the ranks because that's what you need on every side to kind of have been able to maintain success over a longer period of time and not just peak with one team.
Okay, so give us a prediction for the Spain game then.
I'm going to say it's going to be very, very close. Ireland are going to need the win and I think it's going to be 2-1 to Ireland and it's going to be a nail biter.
Okay, brilliant. Looking forward to that one. Jill Pinder, who will be part of the television coverage and has been for the last couple of days, looking forward to checking it out. It's on RTÉ 2 television now. Michelle Finn has qualified for the Olympic Games. So she was in action and she has clocked the second fastest time ever by an Irish steeplechaser, taking 9 seconds off her personal best with 9:29.25. So that is absolutely amazing for Michelle Finn. I love this time of year when you run into Olympic Games and you're starting to see people qualify. We actually had her on the show a while back just after the pandemic hit and she was detailing how difficult it was to train on her own through a pandemic and with an Olympics coming up and trying to qualify and trying to get races and all the rest. So it just shows, Alan, you persevere, you stick with it and things go your way. So that's brilliant for Michelle.
Brilliant. Yeah, like everything in life really, Marie, but as you say, I can't understand just how difficult it must have been for all those athletes over the last year. And as you say, with the pressure of knowing what was at stake and the goal at the end and what they wanted to achieve, obviously, but they couldn't train, couldn't get races, couldn't get anything. But for them to come through now, and what I love about this time of year with the Olympics as well is people that become heroes overnight that you might not have heard of, and obviously people might not pay attention to some of the sports that are involved, and then they go and outdo themselves at the competition and they become a hero overnight, or they do an interview after a race or after a match or whatever the case may be and people fall in love with them. So it is a great time of year coming off the back of everything that everyone has been through. As Marie, there's so much on offer this summer, even coming through town on the way over. The country's back, Marie. We're back.
It definitely feels this like this weekend that there was a huge amount on, even just trying to keep up with everything, like between boxing and hockey and hurling and all those Euro friendlies. There was loads of stuff going on. Alan, there's nothing though that creates a reaction more than talking about the Ireland football team. The texts are flying in. I think blaming past managers for not getting Grealish and Rice is a joke. They'd never had any interest in playing for Ireland and I don't blame them. They are English. So
I never get too bogged down by that, to be honest, Marie. And I would agree. I think they are English lads and they're happy to be playing with England. Obviously there was an opportunity there, but people will argue they weren't playing in their first team at the time, so would you have given them? Rice did play a friendly and was man of the match, and they should have known straight away that we need to cap him. Like, you look at the situation at the moment with Southgate, with Jude Bellingham. I know he's an English lad and he was always going to play for England, but at 17 they're throwing him into the team. So they should have realised with Rice the potential that was there and what he was going to become, and we could have capped him. Might have been slightly different with Grealish at the time, and I would blame the managers that are there, but and certainly for those lads I wouldn't get too bogged down by it because the fact that they are English lads. Like, there's talk at the moment that Bamford and people suggesting we should go for him. We shouldn't. He's English.
He doesn't want to.
And he doesn't want to. You only want lads that are there that want to play. I'd much rather see a young lad from Sligo get a chance than a lad from England that doesn't want to play for us.
Yeah, well, I look forward to the time when we're not having this conversation. I thought it was behind us, but I guess with the Euros coming up and seeing them doing so well, it's hard not to look over and wonder what might have been. Now, I'm going to turn my attention to hurling. Niall Moran joins us. Niall, the scores this weekend: Clare hit 34 points, Limerick hit 33, Galway 4-28. Usually scoring is a good thing, but that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I suppose, look, Marie, I think number one, the thing intensified this weekend. I really think, even with the weather-wise, it really stepped up a gear. We're really coming in 2-3 weeks for a championship. Look, I suppose the issues that have been raised with the score, that's a byproduct of probably what's been spoken about the last couple of years, really. And probably, in my opinion, I strongly believe we're coming back to the whole issue of the sitter. You know, it's bypassing areas of the game, it's bypassing defenders, and ultimately you're seeing scores from the fella's own 45. Like, we're not aghast at anything like that anymore. So, look, with the way, I suppose, the guys physique have gone, obviously the nature of hurdles, how bigger boss and smaller area, bigger sweet spot, like, we're back to the whole issue of the slitter. But look, that's not to undermine what was essentially a really, really enjoyable weekend of hurling. I suppose there was two or three of the games that really had that championship intensity that we were kind of pining for the last couple of weeks. So, look, it's not all bad, far from it.
Yeah, and I think as well, and I know it's a point that's been made, that when crowds come back in as well now, like, you've obviously been in that situation, when you're in a cauldron and there are lots of people and you can feel that energy, it's not as easy to do maybe the magical things that you can do in an empty stadium when you're, you know, there's only 50 people around.
Yeah, definitely. Like, so the environment that you're playing, especially for younger players starting off, like, there is still that challenge game feel at certain points of the game. And even like Waterford and Galway, it was an absolute superb contest yesterday, but I suppose with 15 minutes left, it had that kind of sense of a challenge game feel when Galway were out of sight. And I suppose, look, when there's a crowd there, there is a pressure that comes with it. Like, you're asking me there, like, the idea of driving into a championship on a bus, you're going into Thurles, the square is full, you're getting off the bus, there's people heaving, there's people you know. Like, that is, it takes you to another realm. It's something for, especially younger players, that they may not have experienced, they may not have prepared for themselves. And then I suppose really where it kind of comes into it is in the first 10 minutes of the game, when you're gasping for that little bit of oxygen, that little bit of breath. And for instance, if you win a couple of balls, then you're, you know what I mean, you're the man, you can do walk on air. But if you lose a couple of balls, then you can hear the kind of comments coming in from the crowd, it really puts that extra pressure on you. And look, I do look hopefully by the end of the year we will have those crowds, but it kind of has lent to the kind of challenge game feel in certain parts of games. Alright, yeah.
And where do you stand now on the art of defending? Because a few former All-Ireland winning players said over the weekend that they feel that the art of defending is gone out of the game, that it's not for them anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't be wholesome in any, like, some of the counties, like, there was elements of very poor tackling. Like, I thought for Cork and Limerick in that game, I thought the nature of some of Cork's tackling, like, I thought they really made it easy for Limerick. I thought Waterford, on occasion, like, they didn't lay a glove on Galway, maybe in that second quarter. But then you compare that then with the nature of Galway's tackling, which was very, very evident, like, you know. And so, like, I suppose, look, guys are moving, it's all about creation of space, and I suppose the forwards dropping back so deep, it is leaving defenders one-on-one in that situation. And I suppose, look, the athleticism of guys going, like, as in, you're talking about the art of defending. When we had a defender, Callum Lyons, got 5 points in play yesterday. We had a situation where a wing-back scored nearly all the games, both the Limerick wing-back scored, you know what I mean, Dermot Ryan, Darragh Gray, they all got scores. So the art of defending, the nature of defending, the definition of defending, it's definitely changed. And I think we spoke about it maybe earlier, a couple of weeks ago, where we had cornerbacks coming into attacking mode. So I suppose, again, maybe that's linked back to the fact that the ball can't travel so far. It, do you know what I mean? It means that games are now more fractured. Do you know what I mean? And also, like, before, puckouts would have dropped in between maybe the 45-65, a crowded area. It was harder to get shots away. It was more condensed. Nowadays, it's not. So, again, look, the art of defending isn't dead like that. But, again, if you're one-on-one with the Desi Hutchinsons or the Conor Whelans of this world, you need more than the art of defending. You need a kind of a rosary bead, to be honest, to stop them.
I watched the game yesterday. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, because I watched the Limerick game a couple of weeks ago when John Kiely came out afterwards with those comments, and it was a dreadful game, and I actually agreed with what he was saying at the time. Yesterday, it was the contrast was unbelievable with the Galway-Waterford match. And I know, like, the argument over the slitter and all, but the attacking play that was on show was absolutely incredible between the two teams. Like, when you think of the score that Waterford racked up, yet still lost, and they were unbelievable. I think they went 6, 7, 8 points ahead at the start, yet Galway were so composed, came back into it. And as I say, the skill levels that were on show, I just think, looking at it, and I'm just from an outsider's view looking in at it because I'm a fan, it's just the way the game has evolved, I think, in terms of tactically how much is involved now, and the managers and the players are paying so much attention to it, whereas the old school game of just man on man type thing, and we saw that with football, you're even seeing that in soccer, like, you know what I mean, people say the art of defending is gone. I'd be critical of that as well, but it's just the information that's involved in the game for everybody now, and the access to analysis and everything, and the depth that they go into. But I thought yesterday's game, and I watched a good bit of Kilkenny and Laois, and I thought the contrast between the two games was night and day.
Now, Eamon Sweeney made a good point in the Independent today. He said, for games to really matter, scores must feel earned. Otherwise, you're left with something like the NBA, where points come so thick and fast that you only start paying attention in the closing stages. Are we heading towards that? Because I watch the NBA now and I often feel like that, that you're just getting scores so easily. And I know that Anthony Daly made the point a couple of years ago when he was like, you know, it's almost like ping pong and then anything can happen at the end. And it does feel like that sometimes.
Yeah, I suppose there is a situation there where teams might be 7 or 8 points up with 6 or 7 minutes to go and you feel that they're still not outside. Just to pick up on Alan there, actually, one thing that probably went under the radar yesterday was the performances of two of the refs, Alan Kelly and Fergal Horgan. Like, both of those guys, they haven't been as prominent over the last couple of years, and maybe they were victims of allowing games to be open, and when they were critiqued, they probably ultimately paid the price. But I thought in both their cases, they had two superb performances, and they really added to kind of more free-flowing hurling in the games that took place. I suppose, look, Marie, going back to what you were saying, like, for scores to matter, there has to be an element of defence, whatever. Scores will always matter. I suppose, again, it just comes back to, look, what do we want as spectators? Okay, because obviously players and management, they will operate within the confines of the rules. And I suppose, look, for me, it was, again, as referenced before, the All-Ireland 09-10, where it was just a warrior stuff. It was two teams going, giving it absolutely everything. Scores were hard earned by. But you'll also find that when you get two teams of an even level, and like if you look at Wexford and Antrim, the way the game that they played on Saturday, it was a game of an even level. And like, and the score there, like, it was 121-218, like, that wasn't outrageous scoring. Do you know what I mean? And I suppose one thing that probably really contributed to that was obviously there's a little bit of a crowd in Corrigan Park, but the nature of the stadium in Corrigan Park, it's a small stadium, it's a compact stadium. Even if you had 3,000 or 4,000, there was always going to be a huge atmosphere. So I do think, look, I wouldn't be getting carried away to say that scores are not being easily won. They're not, like, but I suppose just the nature of the athleticism and the fact the ball can travel from so far, it means that it makes the pitch too big to defend such an area. Like, so yeah, again, it really is something, and it's been spoken about for a long time, that the GAA really have to revisit ball. I see it myself at club level, that there's guys getting scores from 55, 60 yards out from their own goal, and you know what I mean? So it's not just the athleticism of the inter-county players, it's happening at club level and underage level as well.
I think the test could be Championship. You know, okay, there won't be massive crowds, but there will be a few people, like we saw at Corrigan Park and like we heard, and that crowd might add to things, and I suppose there's no point getting too bogged down until we see how the summer pans out. And especially, I think, because we're going to be seeing teams that are going to meet again. So like the likes of Limerick against Cork, are Limerick going to be able to put 33 points on the board against Cork in a month's time in the battle of Championship? But when you look at the game at the weekend, what do you think that the managers will have learned, if anything, from playing each other in a league game a few weeks out from Championship, Noel?
Personally, I think Cork might have missed the trick. I know what the argument would be, teams are shadow boxing, and do you know what I mean? They're not showing their full hand, but like, the reality of it is, for elite teams, they go out every day to pulverise the opposition. And I remember having a conversation with Sam Lynch a number of years ago, and he said, the former of the Olympic rower, and he just said every time that he went out, no matter what the nature of the race was, no matter what the nature of the regatta, he needed to put down his opposition. All right, and like, you're coming away from the Gaelic grounds, yes, obviously it was a challenge game in some aspects of it, but Limerick have created a little bit of doubt in Cork in terms of their puckouts. Whereas, okay, Cork, yes, they caught Limerick, they moved at them, they scored two goals, probably left two goals behind them, but they had an opportunity to really maybe lay down a marker on some of Limerick's players who were struggling for form. And I think they actually left the Gaelic grounds and they allowed a number of Limerick players that maybe have been struggling for their top form to really ramp it up a notch. And do you know what I mean? I think, yes, Don O'Grady and Cohart will come with something in July, but I think they could have put in a little bit more doubt in Limerick's mind. I don't think they saw the seeds of doubt, and I think they will be disappointed in how it panned out, because Limerick were comfortable from first quarter on. Limerick were totally in control. They had 11 points on the board, 7 wides, like, they had 18 shots. And I don't see anything in Cork to suggest that may be massively different in the Championship. So, like, I know in that case that Cork would have been disappointed, yeah.
Niall, just on, I suppose, one thing I find fascinating about this debate with the way the game is going, and obviously you're on about the Schlitter as well, and listening to Derek McGrath and Brendan Cummins last night, does anybody ask for the players' view What's the players' view in terms of how they feel about maybe the ball being lighter or the free scoring games? Are they happier to be involved in games like that? Because everybody wants to be involved in games where you have a chance of scoring. But we're all hearing from all sides of the argument, bar the players. What do they think?
I'm still probably in the realm where I'm still close enough to obviously a lot of the Limerick lads. Look, and it's not something, like, as a player, your sole focus is to perform and under conditions that are laid out. And to be honest, like, seldom players don't really complain unless things are falling apart at the seams in terms of preparation. The ball is the ball, and so as you know it at this stage, it's, as a wing forward, that you don't care, because once you get the ball 55 or 60 yards from your own goal, you know that it's a chance. So they're not going to be vocal in it. Like, no player is going to want to have to, do you know what I mean, have the distance to be shot reduced by 30 yards, because it seems in essence that he would become a lesser player. So, do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, if you ask them maybe about something like a tackle that was really directly interfering with how they're performing, then you would get some animated opinions on it. In terms of the ball, so guys, look, it suits a fella to be able to hit the ball as far as he can. He's not going to give a complaint about it. And so just even going back to the weekend, so like with the leaving starts and everything coming up, I suppose you're talking about teams looking for predictive grades and stuff, for fellas with predictive grades. I think there's a number of counties after this weekend that'll be really, really worried about how they performed. And I think Wexford are one county top of the pile there, because I spoke last week about a team that were lacking in confidence, and I think that was shown again against Antrim. Like, they had a start on them, they were 6 points up for a vast majority of the game, but they weren't able to put them away. And I suppose maybe the reaction of Davey on the line, I know it's not the first time he's done it, but it was a circus that they could have done without on Saturday. And even just the body language of some of the players after, they just seemed like a team that were dispirited. I think so. The feeling last year was that they might have timed it wrong, and I think there's a kind of a sense starting to creep into it that maybe they've kind of timed it wrong again. I think how they used the league early on in the league, in terms of experimenting, even I know it is Seamus Casey, a former forward, inside in the goal for the first game out against Leash, he hasn't appeared there since. Just the nature of it, I think there's some counties after this weekend will find themselves in a spot of worry. I think Dublin are another county with Matty Kenny, who's probably in his third year at the moment. Like, Parnell Park was traditionally always a very, very difficult place to go for any team to get a win. And, like, take the two goals out of the scoreline, which came in fast succession, like, they were fairly comprehensively beaten by Clare team too, who were just kind of needing to get that bit of confidence. So, from the weekend, there's a number of teams that will be asking themselves questions. And, like I said, it's only 3 weeks into championship here, so the time isn't really there for major improvement to be made.
So if they're the counties that are going to be asking themselves questions, are Galway a team that have answered a lot of the questions that they had at the start of the league? 4-28 against Waterford, and they look like serious contenders.
They're definitely serious contenders, Marie. And this isn't the Limerick man trying to put it down, but as I said, if you're trying to grade teams at the end of the league, well, Galway are the number one team at the moment. I really think that their levels of intensity, I suppose their panel, they've built a very, very strong panel. They have a number of guys who might have been subs in 18 that are now coming into the frame. Like, you would, Evan Knight again came on the last day, scored 4 points. That's probably the role that he'll end up seeing for championship, that he'd be a major guy, impact sub. But I suppose, look, you look at yesterday, and I suppose a lot of the talk was about Brian Kilcannon, Conor Whelan, and obviously Joe. These are guys that we know of, but like, Conor Cooney to me was a guy who gave a massive performance for a lot of the game. And if you really ask me about Galway and where they're at, I'd prefer to look at the likes of him as a barometer. And when Galway won their All-Ireland, like, Conor Cooney was an all-star. And again, I really think that the Westmeath game, he kind of hit form. He'd won 4-1-5 in play. And again, even yesterday, he had 3 points. He wasn't a standout player, but he was one of the guys who'd be a lesser light, who's probably a better barometer for where they're at. So I really think that it's going to take a fair team to beat Galway this year, and our own county might even be included in that. And do you know what I mean? I think they'll probably come through what in essence might be a softer Leinster than what the Munster counties will. So I think it'll take a big team to beat them.
Yeah, a very impressive Galway team with a Limerick man at the helm. Niall Moran, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Over the weekend, sister and brother Michaela and Aidan Walsh booked their places at the Tokyo Olympics after victories at the European qualifiers in Paris. The Walshes are the first Irish boxing siblings to qualify for the Olympics. And there's a lovely video on Twitter showing them embracing after they'd both qualified, if anyone hasn't seen it. Gavin Casey from The 42 joins us now. Gav, if we weren't emotional enough with the country opening up, that just would have sent people over the edge. It was a lovely moment.
Yeah, I immediately was thinking of their parents back in Belfast as well, because very enormous circumstances. I guess if family members wanted to travel or attend these qualifiers in Paris, they would have been able to, but there was an equally emotional or stirring picture that circulated afterwards of Michaela and Aidan's parents and their coach from Monkstown Amateur Boxing Club in Belfast as well, watching the qualifiers from their living room. And I think it's a nice little keepsake for them to see Michaela, their daughter, hugging their son after the two of them qualified for their first Olympic Games within 45 minutes of each other. And I guess if you can't be there in person, it's nice to have those little video souvenirs and something to remember the day by. But I think, as you say, Marie, there's something about siblings qualifying for the Olympics together that does strike a chord. And we probably automatically just think of their families and all of the sacrifices that we hear athletes speak about all the time that their parents would have made over the years. And You, I think we all have admiration for parents whose single child goes on to become a sporting star in enormous circumstances, but for two of them to do it, it's quite the effort from the Walshes and quite a magical day for them.
Actually, yeah, that's such a good point. Imagine the amount of training that they've had to bring them to, and the food and the weights and everything. Jesus, it is actually very impressive. So myself and Alan were talking a little bit earlier just about what a nice time of the year it is when we're heading into Olympics and people are starting to qualify, and you do get to hear those stories like the Walshes. But where are we at now with our boxers after this weekend of action?
Well, basically, we've got six over the line, and we may or may not have a seventh in the next half an hour. Emmett Brennan has a box-off against Sweden at, I think, about 7:15. People can actually watch that on YouTube if you just search for the official Olympics channel on YouTube. That fight will be streaming, I think, in Ring A, but give it a Google, you'll find it. And that would be it, then, for Ireland. They have six already qualified. Four did so over the course of this tournament in Paris, including the two Walshes, including Aoife O'Rourke from Roscommon, and that was a special day, I think, for Roscommon sport as well. They don't tend to produce too many Olympians, or haven't over the years, so the European champion going to represent Roscommon in Ireland in Tokyo, and Kelly Harrington, who is in the final, as is Michaela Walsh, of this qualification tournament. So she's already qualified, but obviously they have to complete the tournament, and she's actually fighting a British prospect, Caroline Dubois, who's brother is a heavyweight who just won on BT Sport over the weekend by stoppage. He's a kind of a high profile fighter, and she is aiming to become one, so it's actually a really tantalizing matchup that a lot of people in boxing have been looking forward to. Like, Harrington is 31, she's been in and around the top, 2-3 in the world, officially, unofficially, for the last 5 years, I guess, and Dubois is like this next generational talent coming up, and it could be a precursor for what's to come in Tokyo as well. So four over the line in this tournament, two more. Brendan Irvine, the team captain, and Kurt Walker had already sealed their spots. And Emmett Brennan, hopefully to come over the next half an hour. We get seven over there, and let's see how they get on.
That is really, really brilliant. And the Olympics are going to come around very, very quickly. So it's great to have a good team heading over, because boxing is something that we always enjoy at the Olympic Games. And if you're Logan Paul fans as well, like the two of you guys getting up in the middle of the night to watch it.
Am I as mad as you, Gav? Am I?
I'm not sure who's madder, to be honest. I should stress I didn't even go to bed. What happened was I'm rewatching the Marvel movies with my younger sister, and I just decided after we finished Captain America to suspend my disbelief for another couple of hours and watch something that's even more scarcely easy to believe in watching that fight. And you look at two guys like that, and it's—I always think of—it's like two soulmates finding each other. You know, two absolute uber capitalists pulling the wool over her eyes and extracting our money and really leaving us high and dry, feeling high and dry by the end of it. I wasn't expecting to be entertained, but it still leaves you feeling like you've a bit of a black eye of your own after watching it, doesn't it?
I can't believe I got sucked in, honestly, Marie. And I wouldn't mind.
I can't believe both of you.
But
did.
Everything that fight represents, I'm against. everything that that represents.
But you got up in the middle of the night.
But I turned into a positive because I got up then and went up to the beach in Port Marnock and watched the sunrise. So there you go.
Okay, Gavin Casey will be checking in with you again over the next few months as the Olympic Games come closer. Thanks so much for joining us. Alan Cawley, thank you as well for coming into studio and joining us. We're going to be previewing the Euros tomorrow evening, so please tune in. Tara Stewart is up next.